You're listening to Rattigan's Rockcast, a series focused on talking about music from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and even current. Now, here's your host, Tom Rattigan.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to Rattigan's Rockcast. I am, of course, your host, Tom Rattigan. Always will be there for you. Okay, all right. I'll stop getting creepy. But welcome if you're listening to it on WMYO, YouTube, wherever you listen to podcasts, through Anchor, Castos. I'm glad you're on. So, we talked about already the Beatles' first album, Please Please Me. And that was released, of course, in England and, of course, you know, like the UK and all that. And we had their second album, which was their other studio album in the UK. But this was the first album actually released in North America, too. And an interesting thing, so it was called simply With the Beatles. Now, this album is definitely different in a sense. They were both recorded in the same year of 1963. Please Please Me was released in March. This was released in November of 63. And we'll actually get to that interesting release date in a second. So, but first, yeah. So, With the Beatles is basically a different type of album in a sense that it's, you know, it's still got a mix of covers and songs that they're writing. But they have a little bit more, they're a little bit more structured. They're a little bit understanding their sound a little bit better. Like I mentioned in the last edition that I felt like, you know, their single, and even I guess in their album in a sense, was like a pilot and TV show, you know, figure out what works and what doesn't. And that's what this album does. It's got a lot of, you know, songs from Motown. I think that was, you know, a big theme of this too, is to show a little bit of, you know, their rock side of that versions of how they can go from, blend into different types of things, like types of structures of music. They even have a show tune song from The Music Man, Till There Was You. But and before we go into the songs, really, let's talk about the release date. So in 1963, that was when John F. Kennedy was president, but he got assassinated on November 22nd. This was the day the Beatles album was released in the UK. And, in a sense, too, what has been known about, of course, you know, because the JFK assassination was something that, of course, was horrifying for, you know, people to see, considering some people saw it on television. But, you know, the Beatles brought this uplifting message at this time because, you know, they were, you know, yeah, they really brought this uplifting message of, you know, this, you know, just good feel-good music and all that stuff that came around. So, and of course, you know, in a few months they would be on the Ed Sullivan Show playing to millions of screaming girls. So, you know, an interesting, so the thing about now, why don't we go into the album now? So the thing that was different about at least with Please Please Me was that it had like two hit singles, which is you know, of course, Love Me Do and Please Please Me. With the Beatles, really didn't have any like singles, you know, really. You know, I mean, some, you know, songs that are, you know, still really popular are, of course, there's like All My Lovin', considering they played that on the Ed Sullivan Show. Same with Till There Was You, they played that on the Ed Sullivan Show. But you know, that's okay. I think I don't feel like an album needs to have hit singles in order for it to be a good album. You can just listen to, you know, there are songs that don't need to be as singles, even though they're so good and all that stuff. You know, it's like, just because a song's not a single doesn't mean it's not a good song. You know, you can't just make everything a single then, you know, really, then that, you know, disproves the point of, like, with albums and all that. But, songs that I think are, you know, essential on it is, of course, the opening track, It Won't Be Long, and the way it just goes, John just goes right into the vocals of that song. The guitar work for that works pretty well. Definitely got, they're getting a little bit more structured, having a little bit more of that English sound, or the Beatle, or that Beatle sound, you know, as I think we should call it, you know, all that. And another song after that is All I've Got to Do. All I've Got to Do is a really other great song, which is an original from them that they wrote. That's another classic. And then, of course, we've got All My Lovin'. All My Lovin'. Now, what to say about, you know, some of the original stuff is that, you know, especially All My Lovin', I think, is another song that was considered, you know, a Beatles hit in a sense, even though it wasn't released as a single, like, right away, really. It was like, you know, I think, it wasn't a single, it was just, you know, on the album, but it was a well-known song. Like I said, they performed it on the Ed Sullivan Show. It was the first song they played on the Ed Sullivan Show. You know, the harmonies are something that I think is well-known, that I remember known about it for the first time when I was a kid, hearing John and George's harmonies, because Paul's the one that take lead on this, and John does the backing vocals with George on this one, and it just shows that, you know, how versatile they were, in a sense, you know, like, that it really wasn't just, like, a frontman, like, with John and George and Paul being his backup singers. It, you know, it flipped around, you know, and all that. So that, I think that's what, you know, gives away the song. I think the guitar work, of course, is good. I think Paul, of course, is just, you know, he's an established songwriter. A song that's interesting on this album that I think really works well is Don't Bother Me, which is George's first, you know, self-written song that it was the first song that he wrote that was going to be on a Beatles album. And he said, the way he describes it was that it was his attempt of, you know, writing songs, and it was all that. And also, too, the story was he was just like, when he wrote it, he was just sick and he just didn't feel good. So he was just like, don't bother me. And that's how the song came out. And I've always, honestly, I think that's one of my favorite George's songs. That's one of my favorite George songs from the Beatles. When I look back at, like, an early song of George's that he did, that's one of my favorites of his. You know, of course, it's little now considering of all the other great songs he came up with, like Something and While My Guitar Gently Weeps. But there's something about this song that I just love. I think, you know, it's because it's simple, you know? I think also, too, the tone delivering in George's voice, especially when he gets a little low going to the chorus. You know, I think he's just like, he's getting, you know, George was somebody, I think, also, too, that wasn't, you know, didn't really need the spotlight in a sense of, you know, it was reported that he had stage fright, and all that. And I think it was just that, you know, he, you know, in this song, you could tell he's really, like, you know, finding his path of knowing how to sound like a lead singer and how to, you know, have this be, you know, his song, you know? That works well. A song I always thought was really interesting, I remember, so, a little story, you know, personal story for me. As a kid, you know, of course, I got into the Beatles at a really young age, through the influence from my father and all that stuff, because my father loved that music and all that. There was this radio station called that had a, I think it was Beatle Brunch, or, like, there was two things. There was Beatle Breakfast, which was at, like, they played two Beatles songs, and then you did trivia in the mornings on the weekdays, and then there was Beatle Brunch, or something like that, or, like, something like that. It was Beatle Breakfast, Beatle Brunch. But anyway, the guy who did it, I think his name was Joe Johns, I think, it was this really just this segment of, you know, going into the stories of the Beatles' history and all that. And I remember hearing the song A Little Child. And Little Child, if you think about it, it's not, you know, there's not that much there. It's only like, I don't even think it's 2 minutes. When I heard it, I was just like, oh, what is that? Like, what's that song, Dad? And like, my dad's like, oh, it's called Little Child. But there wasn't that much, you know, it wasn't as big of a hit. And, you know, the harmonica solo works well on that, and all that. What I thought was interesting was because I thought John's voice was really low on it. It sounded like, I thought, honestly, it sounded so low that I thought it was Ringo's voice. But no, it was actually John's voice and all that stuff. And the guitar works pretty well on it, too. That's what I say about that song. And then when we go into Till There Was You. So, Till There Was You is a song from... It's one of the only songs they really do that's from, like, a musical, really. From what I can think of on the top of my head, out of all the covers, really. Yeah, like, this is the one that was from the musical that was from the Music Man. You know, it's, like, I love... Of course, I love that movie, you know. Shirley Jones, Robert Preston, of course. But, you know, the way... Paul does it, I think, is great, because I think, you know, it shows that he can, you know, really do these, you know, these beautiful ballads. You know, I think it kind of shows that he, you know, how versatile his voice is, and, like, you know, of what even the Beatles can do. The Beatles don't have to just do rock and lovey-dovey songs, you know. They are able to play emotional love songs that go more in depth, you know, and all that. And, you know, I think, you know, and an interesting thing is, this was played on the Ed Sullivan Show, and this was when their names, when they played the song, this was when their names were introduced to the public. So you saw, you know, and then, of course, it was that famous, so it had, like, you know, it showed Paul, then it showed Ringo, then it showed George, and then it showed John, and then it had Sorry Girls, he's married. which, you know, they thought would be funny to have and all that stuff. Which is pretty cool, you know, and all that. So it's pretty cool that was the song that that's how they got introduced, was when they were playing that song. It was considered, like, I think, like, you know, a memorable song from that period, especially. And one of their covers that I think is well known. And then now we talk about well-known covers, and my dad talks about how these covers were played on the radio a lot, which was Mr. Postman by the Marvelettes, Motown group, and of course Chuck Berry's song Roll Over Beethoven, that's sung by George. So Mr. Postman, I love just the whole, all the harmonies from John, Paul, and George's voice on it. Of course, John doing the lead and all that. And they just do it so fun, you know. They just, like, when, you know, because honestly, you know, there are some people who are like, oh, I only like the later Beatles stuff. They didn't do, like, anything really that good in the early days. And yeah, of course, there was their pop era stuff. But I always liked their early stuff, too. Like, I like their early stuff just as much as their later stuff. Like, there are some days where I need to listen to, like, From Me to You or A Little Child, you know. We all need a little bit of that early Beatles spirit in us, you know, because it's about feeling young, you know. It's about just wanting to let loose and have fun and, you know, enjoy life and understand life, you know, and all that. And that's what I think, you know, these early albums represent too, a sense of innocence or a sense of, you know, just, you know, trying to figure the world out for yourself without, you know, criticism from others, you know. That's what I think represents, you know, early Beatles albums in a sense. Especially Roll Over Beethoven, which I think was George's, was a song that show that George could play really great, you know, guitar work, and, like, you know, could really just, win in on the guitar. But I think this is another song that proves George as becoming a lead singer, you know, like, knowing, like, where to sing. You know, I think he does it pretty well. You know, I'm glad, I always loved when George sang on albums. And, you know, another interesting thing is, like, yeah, because, like, this, you know, definitely, I think they definitely are able to establish a little bit of a different style in this. Not, you know, it's the same song, like, in a sense, they don't add so much anything new to what Chuck Berry did, but they have a little bit of that difference with it from, you know, just, you know, updating the sound or just, like, you know, putting, like, you know, a Beatles spin on it in a sense, you know. Still, but, like, keeping original, like, you know, they're able to, you know, have a little bit of that, like, you could tell it's a Fab Four song, but they're able to also keep the 50s element, too. Like, the stuff, like, they weren't gonna, like, you know, like, crop out anything that Berry did, which, you know, works, you know, too, you know. It's like, you know, they were able to, you know, they just love the song, so they want to do that, you know, and that's what they did. Another song on this album, which is the ninth song, which is, like, wow, we're really, like, going into, like, the whole catalog. Hey, you know, that's fine. You know, hey, that's what we're doing. But, like, because I think the thing, too, is with this song, Hold Me Tight, for instance. This was sung by Paul. This is a song that's very, you know, not a lot of people probably remember and notice on. You know, like, it's funny because my dad and I were talking about this, and my dad always talks about how we love the song and how we always thought that it was funny how it just was never as picked up or, you know, well known in a sense, and just always overlooked upon. And it is overlooked upon. Thinking about it now, it's got a catchy melody, good, instrumentation, and that's really what you need in a song, is a catchy melody, you know, a good hook, and that's how you get a hit song. And, and it works well. You know, they're sticking to the Beatles style and all that. It does still seem like it's like a one of those prototype songs, like something like, I think even like for Please Please Me, There's a Place. I can't kind of see that as a similarity to both these songs, that these songs were more of like showing what they can do, and of not like, it was more of a showing what they can do and what they can elevate to. And even though their songs were not as good on their own, you know, they weren't like, you know, masterpiece songs, but just like, you know, showing people that they can do stuff, like that they can elevate their music, they can, you know, they know how to play a song, they know how to write a song, and of course they came up with, they had more songs throughout, their catalog, but these are definitely songs that if you haven't listened to, would definitely check out, definitely recommend. And then we've got one of their covers, which I think is probably their best cover on this album, I think, is You Really Got a Hold on Me from Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. I think the piano playing on this works, the guitar beat, how they do it so slow. John's voice just works well. John was the right Beatle to sing this song. But what I really love, and I've mentioned this before, that about how in the early days George was just a great backing vocalist, and on this song you can really hear him well. And even though Paul is on the song, George dominates, I think, the backing vocal harmony on this. And you know, of course, in the call and response when they're like, "You really got a hold on me," you really just hear George going all at it. And you could just tell in this song that these guys, you know, have this camaraderie and this chemistry, and they're just like these friends that can just, you know, have fun and, you know, just, you know, sing and play a good tune together, and that's that, you know. So moving on to their number 11 track, which is I Wanna Be Your Man, which is sung by, of course, Ringo Starr. Now, this is an interesting song because it was actually a song that was given, like, you know, that John and Paul gave to the Rolling Stones. But an interesting thing, though, too, is that, you know, because they needed, like, you know, a song for their album and stuff, so they did I Wanna Be Your Man, and they gave it to Ringo and all that. And, Ringo, I think, does a good job at singing the song. I think, you know, it's funny, though, because, you know, it doesn't sound like Ringo at first, or it sounds like Ringo, but I think it's almost like a double track kind of thing. And the thing I noticed about when Ringo does a song, it's always on the harmonies, it's always, John and Paul. It's never John, Paul, George, and Ringo, barely. It's always, like, George never really, you never hear George on the harmonies on that. I don't know if that was, like, you know, planned, or just, like, of, like, just that having two harmonies instead of three or better. Like, you know, I don't know if it was, like, if they thought it sounded better with less harmonies. That was just one of the mysteries of the Beatles I always found interesting. Like, oh, how come my George doesn't sit on that too? Like, too, you know? I mean, I think there were a few songs where, you know, he did send back vocals when Ringo was in lead. Like, I think, like, Boys and even Yellow Submarine. But anyway, with this song, yeah, no, I mean, Ringo does it well. Definitely got that rock style. I gotta say, I do think I like this. Of course, I like this song better than the Stones version, I think. I'm more familiar with this version. Not that I don't like the Stones version. I think the Stones version, I was a little bit more, still not, you know, because it was their first single, so, you know, not well polished in a sense. You know, they were, of course, able to come up with, you know, a better career and catalog as time went on, too. So that's what I'll say about them. But I think with Ringo doing this song, I think it's a good song for him. I think it's definitely a signature Ringo tune. I think, he definitely, I think, does a good job at making it his own. You know, is it the most memorable Ringo? Like, no, like, I say it's, like, it's his signature song in a sense, but it's not his, like, I would say it would maybe be considered one of his signature songs in, like, maybe, like, six or, like, the fifth, you know, like, out of the five signature songs for him. Is it the most memorable tune from the Beatles? No. But, you know, is it a good track to just listen to when you're having a bad day or just whenever you want to listen to some music? Yeah, of course it's a great song to listen to. It's actually used in the film that The Hard Day's Night, too. So, which we'll talk a little bit more about that later as well. So, don't worry about that. But, okay. So now we have like three more tracks that we're gonna mention. So there was "Devil in Her Heart," which was another cover that George sings. This is actually too an interesting thing to point out is this is one of the two albums that has 14 tracks that George sings three songs on instead of two. Every other song he either sang two or just one song. But out of the 14, out of the albums that had 14 tracks, there was only two that he had three songs on. And it's funny how it was the second album, and all that. But yeah, no, I think I'm glad that there's more George songs on this too, because I like songs that have George on it. Like I love albums that have, you know, as much George as they do. I mean, of course, John and Paul always had more songs, and of course, you know, John even still has more in a sense, you know, than Paul, considering that he, you know, like, it's still, you know, he's still, you know, in the controlling phase of the group, because it was his band, in a sense, you know, he felt, you know, it was really, he was the one that was leading it, even though Paul was, like, second in command, in a sense, John was, you know, just this leader, this effective leader, and this force in nature that really was able to help build a strong, wild, good sense of the Beatles. So two songs that end the album is, well, one which is a, and they're both John songs, so the 13th is "Not a Second Time," and this is a song I've always thought like did not get the credit it deserved, and it's a song that's also, I think, overlooked upon, that should be more well known. And I think, you know, I can hear, you know, a little bit of a modern version of it too. I can hear, like, you know, like, I can hear modern, like, it sounds like a song that could be, you know, written in the modern day. It definitely, I think, is able to have that. It doesn't sound like, oh, this sounds like an early 60s or late 50s song, you know. It doesn't have, like, a time period thing to it, you know. It's a song that it's just, like, that's just in the present, you know. It's just flown. That's what art should be. It shouldn't have to have a date and all that stuff. In order for an art to be really effective, it has to be timeless. Just remember that. So, the last track we'll go into is, of course, "Money." That's What I Want. And, you know, this song, you know, I mean, it's like Twist and Shout in the sense that it's another last cover, you know, a little bit more fun, a little bit more on the edge, and a little bit more of, like, just partying it up, and Johnson the lead on that. I think the thing to say about this is just very, you know, just it's a party type of album in a sense, you know. It's very, you know, just like, that's what I want. That's what I want, you know. And, like, you know, and it's like talking about money and all that stuff, and just, you know, like, you know. You know, because, like, when I remember hearing that as a kid, it's like saying to my dad, it's like, why is it, why did they say, like, why do they really, like, want money? And then you realize, as when you get older, and even when you're, you know, at that age too, I've seen a lot of shows that were talking about how money is so good, and, you know, it just shows you, it's like, I want money, you know. And I just always love that, like, that's what I want, that's what I want. And yeah, so that was a cover from, yeah, like, from Barrett Strawn. Yeah, that was his name. Barrett Strawn did the original song in around 59 and 1960 and all that. And of course, that's a great, great song. So that's my take on the album. What I will say is, because, like I say, I label this by, I don't do any number ranking. How I label it is by going into what I think, what I would call it. I think this is a very, you know, underground record. and then since. So I would call it, you know, like really like maybe the word, I was going to have a word, I was going to call it smooth. But I think what's better is underappreciated, I think, is a word that should be used to describe this album. Because this album is something that I think is very overlooked upon in the Beatles catalog, in a sense. But I think, you know, because, of course, it didn't have the hit singles on it. But, you know, it had songs like, it reminds me of songs like from that, just like that, you know, that groove age of the early 60s, even like the Greenwich Village style of what was going on at that time. It has a little bit of that New York quality, you know. They were able to, you know, really sound American in their music, and it was really able to have that American, you know, quality and that New York type of, you know, rough beat 60s sound, you know. So I'm gonna label it underappreciated, like, because it's just like this, you know, this song, and some of these songs were songs that, you know, you wouldn't even think of, right? And that's why I call it, in a sense, like, you know, like, you know, like, that's why I call it, like, really, like, underappreciated, and this whole, you know, like, just this type of music at, like, coming up to you at your feet that, oh, I didn't even know, like, oh, wow, it's interesting, like, you know, for them to cover a show tune, I think just says a lot about the group of, like, that they didn't care if it was, you know, a mainstream rock, like, that if it was not a rock song, you know. If they liked it, they did it, you know, and they were able to find a way to make it work. So that's it for today's edition. I really appreciate you guys for listening in, and see you guys next time. Bye.